You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to this Friday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, and over at 8 points, 9 seconds. Yesterday was the start of the Pacers' brutal run of schedule on national television against the Milwaukee Bucks, and it did not start as favorably as one would like. They got smoked by the Bucks 117-98, and I got someone here to talk about it with me, someone I've known for a while and I've never actually spoken to on a show. It's been way too long. Can I ruin your name? Do people know your name in Bucks?
Yeah, people know my name. It's out there.
Hey, Brian Sampson, the curator of the Mighty Bucks Film Room on Twitter. Brian, how you doing, man?
Good. I'm excited to be on here and excited to talk some basketball with you, especially after this game, at least from my perspective.
It's always fun to talk about, like losing a big to a team that I feel like the Pacers are worse than. I'm just like, eh, all right, I'll tell you. Like, when they lost the Cavs, I was like, man, I have to talk about that. Like, that sucks. At least I'm not embarrassed about this one. So this game was actually a battle for the first half. I believe it was a 4-point game at halftime. What did you see from the Bucks in the first half that didn't let them take off in the way that they were able to in the second half?
Whoa. Sorry, I got ESPN up here. Stuff. Sorry.
You're good.
So the first half – sorry, go ahead. Repeat your question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a 4-point game at halftime. It looked like we might have a battle in this one. Bucks really took off in the second half. What did you see in the first half that kind of held the Bucks down and kept this game so close?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pacers are an extremely physical team. They're so tough, and they just make you work for every bucket. I mean, even though the Bucks scored 54 points in that first half, I think it was 54-50, and, you know, the Pacers went on a little run there to end the second quarter, if I'm remembering correctly, and the Bucks, they only scored like 5 points in the last 5+ minutes, and the Pacers just make you work all the time, and they don't give up anything easy. So I think that was just the biggest thing that stood out to me, is the Pacers got the Bucks out of their rhythm there. Milwaukee hit quite a few of their three-pointers right away to start the game, but then they couldn't find those same threes in the second quarter, and the Pacers got a little hot there at the end of the half. So I think that's just the biggest takeaway. You know, there's just so many, without Oladipo, the Pacers don't have a star, but they just have so many grinders and so many guys who just make the other team work. And, you know, you have to have multiple creators in order to take advantage of that. And the Pacers just always put the pressure on. So I think that they did a really nice job with all of that.
Yeah, they were finding a way down the stretch of the half, and Lopez's drop coverage was opening up stuff for Turner a lot of the game. And at that point in time, I checked at halftime because the first time these two teams played in Milwaukee, so way back in October, I don't know how much you remember of that game, I posted a shot chart for both teams at the end of the game, and the Bucks had some awesome Moriball going on. You know, it was before everybody knew that this was going to be their thing, and the Pacers took a million mid-rangers and missed like half of them, and that was, you know, besides the Bucks kicking their ass, that was the game. So this time I was actually pretty curious what the shot charts would look like. And at halftime, the Pacers had attempted and made more threes. And it shook out that they attempted more and made the same amount. But I was shocked at how many good looks they were able to create from deep. And I like that you said that the Bucks hit all their threes early, because I felt like the Pacers really picked up their three-point defense in that first half, and they got it to a 4-point game right before the half. And then it all fell apart on the tech on Giannis. Talk to me about the hug. Did you laugh at the hug?
I didn't see that at first. At first I thought the foul was up high. I think it was a Turner that was involved
on Turner's block. Yeah,
and I think he might have got Giannis too. But I think the more obvious one was Bogdanović trying to wrap him up and just prevent him from throwing down. And the official missed that one.
I cannot believe it.
It's crazy. I mean, when you got a guy that strong, because even like it took me a couple of times to watch the replay. And if you have to watch a replay, like, I mean, this was an obvious one, but still, there's just so much happening on that play. And Giannis just went right through it, even though Bogdanović was obviously there trying to hold him down.
For those that didn't see it, Giannis went up to try to dunk on Turner. And Turner got like a hand on it. It was a pretty good block. But they show the replay from the top of the backboard. And before Giannis even is off the ground, Bojan has two arms fully around him, like he's like about to be blown away in the wind and he needed to grab onto something. It was super funny. They didn't call a foul. Giannis immediately gets a tech. I believe the Pacers were winning or tied at this point in the game. I don't remember the exact score. But then a 24-9 run on the ensuing very pissed off Giannis and the Bucks group that was in the game. Giannis dunked right away and stared down the official right after, which if that was Trae Young, you would have got ejected. So good thing it's an MVP candidate and not Trae Young. But that run was the game, that 15-point run and a 19-point win. I mean, that's basically your game right there. Do you feel like it was just energy or were they really schematically getting stuff going at that point in time?
I think it was a little bit of both. The Bucks, they do this thing this year where they kind of coast throughout games, and because they know that they have that extra level, you know, they usually just turn it on. You guys saw that in the last Pacers game right before the All-Star break when Bucks were down 10 with like, 9.5 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden they just turned on this other gear and outscored the Pacers by 19 points the rest of the way, I think. And so Milwaukee, they've had this gear. I compare them to kind of like a poor man's Warriors. The Warriors, you know, sometimes they'll just play with their food, cruise throughout the first, second quarters, and then all of a sudden third quarter they'll explode, go up 20. And the Bucks have been doing that same kind of thing this year, and I think that's what it was. The Bucks just then picked up the intensity level, like you said. Giannis got an offensive rebound on the very next possession, threw it down, kind of screamed, looked at the official, and then he's just pumped up from there, and the rest of the team kind of fed off that, and it just carried on throughout the rest of the game. And the Bucks ended up, you know, just really hitting some shots too, and playing defense, picking everything up from there on out.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, 24 points in like 6 minutes is insane.
Not bad.
No, it's very, very good. But I mean, I was more impressed with the defense really because the Pacers were rolling in the second half, and they got that run to get it close at halftime. And I thought, you know, wow, if they keep this up, they have a chance. And like, Brooke Lopez, for all the great stuff he's done on defense this year, was really struggling in these pick and pops with Turner. He was getting, I mean, kind of by design, but, you know, they were conceding some stuff there. By the way, Brooke Lopez in the 19-point win, -3 in 30 minutes. Isn't that wild?
Turner is a tough matchup for him. Turner is the exact type of player who can expose Lopez for his weaknesses.
Turner -11, Brooke Lopez -3, yet they shared the court for like 20-something minutes. Isn't that wild? But then the defense just really picked up all of a sudden, and I was so impressed by that. And I feel like when you have so many – like the Bucks are first in defense. Is that right? Are they still first?
Yep.
I feel like with their length and speed, like I just don't know how they – you know, like I feel like if they turn it on in the playoffs, they're just going to be this good all the time.
Yeah, I think that the Bucks, they have a nice blend of players. You know, Brooke Lopez, he's got cement blocks for feet, but he can guard the rim, the painted area, that kind of stuff. Giannis, he's the free safety, the defense. He kind of does some roaming, can pick up when Brooke, you know, pick up that slack. And then Bledsoe and Middleton, they're really good perimeter defenders too. And so you'll see them a lot of times matched up on the best wing or best perimeter guys. And so they have that nice mix where all those guys can take on their own man, but then also, like you said, like they have nice length as well, and they can really switch, or they don't switch very often, but they can switch, as we saw in that last Pacers game. But they can just do a lot of nice things defensively in that end of the court.
Yeah, it's really insane. You have 3 seconds. No, that's too short. You have 10 seconds. Give me your Giannis Defensive Player of the Year pitch.
You know, he can just do a little bit of everything. He doesn't fit cleanly into a box. He's one of the only players who can adequately guard 1 through 5 this year. And so I think that's a key point. And defensive stats don't always help him, but he can do just about everything above average to great.
Yeah, I agree. I think my favorite new thing, this is not related to the basketball game that just happened, I just wanted to bring it up, is the Paul George for MVP stuff makes no sense to me, because there's no argument I feel like you can make for PG that you can't make for Giannis with an extra level of amplification, and I just don't understand it.
But Paul George is a two-way player, didn't you know that?
I think Paul George has been really good. He'll probably finish third, but like there's no argument that you make for PG that I'm like, Giannis isn't also doing the exact same thing. And
yeah, George has been great this season. I love Paul George. I think he's a great basketball player. For a moment, I forgot he was a Pacer. But
no, you're good. I said him first.
I love Paul George. I think he's a great player. Like he deserves all the praise for coming all the way back from that injury. So like that, I think two people just like to have that talk about MVP race. I mean, we have three really good candidates in Harden, George and Giannis.
You have two really good candidates and a clear third, I think.
But he's still a strong candidate. Most years, you know, he would be a strong candidate.
He would. Yeah, you got Giannis winning his first of probably three or four, maybe even more than that this season. Another guy who had a good game, and so this is usually the Pacers win a lot or stay in a lot of games because their bench is so good. No, Sabonis has kind of crippled that, but Kyle O'Quinn stepped up for the Pacers, 5 of 7 for 11 points to go with 5 rebounds. But the Bucks bench, led by the mighty Ersan Ilyasova, was actually pretty impressive in this game. And every time Ilyasova plays, I just, for some reason, I'm like, man, he'd be awesome on the Pacers, but I don't think they'll ever have him. Talk about the bench for Milwaukee in this game, because I know they are quote unquote deep, but a lot of the depth pieces are great because they fit with Giannis. This time, I felt like even with Giannis out, they were able to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bench unit, they went 11 deep tonight. They ended up playing 12 overall, but they played 11 players in the first half, and I think that's just huge. I mean, they have players who can do a little bit of everything. You know, you got a guy like Pat Connaughton or Dante DiVincenzo who just run around the court, hustle guys, jump, they sky for rebounds, jump out of position, all that stuff. And then they got grinders like Ersan, like Mirotić, you know, guys who'll do some of that dirty work as well. And so they just have a little bit of everything. They went 11 deep, but they're also missing probably two of their top eight players in George Hill and Sterling Brown. And I know I don't need to talk to you guys as Pacer fans about injuries, but I think that just shows, like, just speaking only to depth, they are a deep team, and that's part of what makes them so good. They don't have, like, that clear-cut second guy. I mean, maybe you can make the case – you can make a strong case that Middleton is, but they usually just rely on that balanced scoring and that balanced depth to really get the job done and always keep the pressure on their opponents.
I enjoyed you talking about Middleton. I'm going to get to a Middleton question at the end that you're not going to – be a super fan of, but maybe you will be. I don't know. Let's flip this one around. I'm going to ask you a Pacers question. What Pacer are you the most impressed with in this game?
In this game tonight?
Isn't that hard? Yeah.
You know, I'm a big, like, every time the Bucks play the Pacers, I just become more and more of a Pacers fan. I think that what they're doing is just tremendous. I mean, even though they're, you know, they're division rivals, whatever, it's just, they're just grinders. You know, they play hard. They make you work every single night. You know, nothing's going to be easy. But I think, you know, Bojan Bogdanović, he always impresses me. He's really stepped up into this role as kind of the lead scorer for the Pacers. And, you know, tonight he didn't have a huge game, but his numbers were pretty solid and his play is pretty solid. So he always impressed me. He got a little chippy at the end of the last game before All-Star.
Yes, he did.
But, like, I just respect his game. He's a great shooter. I think he'd be a great fit. I mean, we can Ersan for Bojan. Does that sound like a good deal?
Wow. No, thank you. If you throw in a Greek Freak, we might have a deal here.
Yeah, let's talk.
Man. But
yeah. I think that he's just impressive. I love his three-point stroke. And him and Miles Turner, I mean, Turner, he's going to be a great player. He's getting better.
He is a great player, period. Mm-hmm. Stamp.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are two guys that really stuck out to me.
Yeah, Turner had a great game. That's his career high tied in rebounds tonight at 17. Oh. Yeah. I forget the other one. It was earlier this season, actually. Bojan, I was happy because he averaged over 21 a game in February, and then March comes, and they're on national TV twice in a row. And all I want is for some national people to look in and be like, oh, my God, this Bojan guy can really score. And he's, you know, 17 isn't great, but, like, he did pretty well. And I thought, yes, okay, people are going to notice this dude.
Well, I think, you know, the first step to getting to greatness is that consistency, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what separates, you know, the good players. They bring it every night. So even if he's not putting up huge numbers, getting to that 17, you know, that's the first step, is just that consistency.
Yeah. I think he's getting there. He's at that point now that they're going to have to pay a bunch of money to keep him. But if they can have this consistency with Vic next year, oh, boy. Oh, boy. And the return of Sabonis, who would have been incredibly crucial in this game because Pau Gasol is not very good. No offense.
Oh, I don't know why Gasol is out there. I mean, the Bucks are loaded in the front court. There's
the Brooke Lopez doesn't play 40 minutes a game.
Yeah. Well, there's a DJ Wilson contingent out there too who really want him to play. He was playing well and has kind of now got the shaft since they acquired Mirotić and Gasol. So, yeah.
DJ Wilson, TJ Leaf, back-to-back picks, and two guys who have created a lot of animosity for their fan bases.
Yeah, DJ Wilson, he in Bucks fandom, at least, he somehow has a bunch of stands and guys who just really love his play. I mean, he's played, he's what, a year and a half into his career. He's only played well for 2 months in the NBA. So he's really, he has a fandom out there in Bucks Twitter.
Leafs had about 2 weeks. So, well, but they're the last 2 weeks before tonight. So at least that's good. He's rounding into form. All right, we're going to do a nine-game question. I don't know how much you're going to like it. I keep seeing you fighting this battle on your own Twitter timeline of people discussing the upcoming summer for the Bucks. Mainly Chris Middleton is the battle you're fighting. Is this guy worth the max? So a background before I ask the question. Before the Bledsoe extension, I thought the Pacers should sign one Bucks free agent this summer if they could, whether it be Bledsoe or Middleton or Brogdon. I think any of those three guys would have been a sublime fit in the Pacers' space on their roster. Now I think the Bledsoe extension signals they're going to try to keep all their guys. Are you comfortable paying Middleton the max? Because I know a team that will probably do their best to do so if you aren't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the most comfortable with it, but I don't see a better alternative. So that's kind of the battle
that
I'm fighting. And I think one thing that makes it difficult is the max contract is such a skewed number. I mean, players like Steph Curry or LeBron James, it really diminishes their value. Like they'd be making tens of millions more a year if it wasn't for the max contract. So then
on the open market, he'd be like LeBron would get like $60 million a year.
Right. And so then you got people trying to compare, oh, well, they can't be making nearly the same money. There's not a max player, but in a free market, he would probably demand what Middleton would probably demand, close to what the max is, because if you have, you know, the market, you're worth what teams will pay you, right? So if you have two teams willing to pay you near that money, it's obvious that you're worth the max. And he does so many things. He's not great at, or he's not like elite at anything, but he just does so many things good to great that it makes fans hard. And, you know, sometimes I think you just sour on a player. He's been around for a number of years now, and sometimes you just sour on those certain players.
It's just a natural growth cycle of like fandom, right?
Right.
So the thing for me is beyond like, okay, so there's a lot of reasons. One is that Bojan's really good. He can score really well. At the same token, you need good defensive wings to be an elite team. Chris Middleton is a very good defensive wing. Two, sourced reporting, and by sourced, that was a lazy sentence. Zach Lowe has suggested to keep an eye on the Pacers for a Middleton suitor. Mm-hmm. So it makes a lot of sense, and smart people who with sources are saying that there's something there. And three, Middleton's G League start was with the Mad Ants, the Pacers G League team. I remember it was a big deal at All-Star Weekend. He was the first G League alum All-Star. Mm-hmm. So connecting some dots, it seems like the fit is really good. And in a normal free agency period for Middleton where he's not, you know, where his incumbent team isn't the best team in the league, where he's a perfect fit, I feel like they would have a really good shot at getting him. But that's the problem is that the Bucks have no reason to not give him whatever he wants, and he probably loves it there because he's very good on a very good team.
Yeah, well, I think so over All-Star break, there's a bunch of articles written about Middleton, right? Mm-hmm. And one of them, I'm not even going to try to guess who because I can't even remember, but it was talking, one of the Bucks owners was talking about Middleton, and they're like, does he love it enough to re-sign in Milwaukee? Yes. Does he love it like so much that he'll give us a discount? No. And so I think that leaves that window open. You know, Middleton, he's criminally underpaid, getting paid like $13 million, something like that this year. And so there's no way he's going to take a discount. You know, right. If I were him, this is his only chance of getting that big contract. So he'll take probably whatever offer has the most money. And if the Bucks are going to try to get cute with it, then I think they're at a real risk of losing him and not having anyone to replace him. And he's that perfect second player, you know, on any team, especially like the Pacers, because he doesn't need the ball in his hands a bunch. He can space the floor. He's 6'8", so he can guard 2 through 4, you know, and just give your lineup that much more flexibility on both ends of the floor.
You make me want him more. You're being mean now.
And I think he's like 26, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go. If he didn't play for the Mad Ants, I would be just like wasting my time. But I'm trying to make as many random dots as I can between Middleton and the Pacers organization. The other one, Brogdon's the way lesser scale because the Pacers never go for restricted free agents, and there's no way that any team is going to like pay Brogdon a stupid amount of money just because of his skill set. So I feel like there's no way he leaves the Bucks. Like he was insanely good in this game. despite only having 7 points, I thought he was unbelievable. But I still would like him a lot. I just think he'd fit really well, but that's a moot point. There's no way.
Yeah. I mean, Brogdon, he's another good player. He's, you know, I think that he can spread the floor. He gets really, you'd get annoyed with him quick. I think he gets a little, it's sticky hands. You know, you saw that a couple of times tonight where he just doesn't look up, isn't passing the ball, isn't moving it, you know, tries to take his man one-on-one, but you know, he can play a little,
Tyreek Evans-esque.
Yeah.
But he's better at everything else.
His position is kind of like point guard, shooting guard, but he's really like an undersized small forward as far as like lateral quickness and defensive chops go.
Yeah, he does so many other things that I like besides, you know, does he miss free throws? No, like it's crazy.
No, he's on pace for a 40-50-90 season.
Is he really?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Is he the only guy in the league? I haven't heard any. Usually if a Warriors guy's going to hit it, they talk about it a lot, but if no Warriors guy's going to hit it, nobody talks about it, and I haven't heard about it. So I think he might be the only guy on pace for it.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Good for him, man. Good for the Bucks. All right, one more thing. This game was, you know, the Bucks just wiped the floor with the Pacers every time. I mean, the only time the Pacers were able to beat them this year was when Thad played the defensive game of his life. I feel like you and the Bucks contingent would not afraid is the wrong word, but like in terms of preferential matchups in the second round of the playoffs, you guys would ideally like to see the Pacers. Am I correct in that assumption?
I think, yeah. I think yes, but knowing, I think Bucks fan would say he'd rather play the Pacers than the 76ers or Celtics, but knowing damn well that the Pacers would give them a fight for their life and it'd be a grind out series. I mean, I think that's just, it has less to do with the Pacers, but and more to do with the talent on the 76ers and on the Celtics, you know, and I think that it would be a tough series, even if it only went 4 or 5 games, it would still, every game would just wear you down. You know, the Pacers are so physical, but yeah, to answer your question, I think that would be like the dream scenario where Pacers slide to 4, take out either Boston or Philly in the first round and move on to Milwaukee in the semifinals.
And being other teams' dream scenarios makes me sad, but I get it.
And like I said, it has less to do with the Pacers. I mean, the Pacers, every time the Bucks play them, I get more and more impressed. And I think that they're a really good team. But when you're missing your all-star, when you're missing your best player too, I think that changes a lot, you know, for this season. So
it does. Well, if you want to keep up with the MVP from Greece, yes, I just endorsed my MVP as Giannis, not Harden. And the Bucks, follow Brian on Twitter at Bucks Film Room. There's no underscores in that, right? It's just Bucks Film Room, one word.
The original Bucks Film Room.
Ooh, there's a copy?
No, I don't think so. But there's no underscore. It's just straight Bucks Film Room.
All right. Yes, I love it. Yes, at Bucks Film Room, he does great stuff for everything. I mean, I just asked him about contract stuff, and he does X's and O's. He knows the team really well. He's over at Brew Hoop, too. They have a great team over there, the SB Nation Bucks site. It's awesome. So go follow him and check him out. As always, you know where I am at T East NBA. We'll be back next week. Adam will be back Monday. We'll talk about this week that was and the weeks coming up, probably because their schedule's so hard. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and have a great weekend.